Our reading today is John 14, 1 to 11. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? And Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Philip said, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. And Jesus answered, Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I have been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. God bless that reading.
We'll talk about hope this morning. And it might sound a bit depressing, but I need to remind us all that we're all going one day. And I say that because in the old days when they were teaching me to preach, I often say about Baron McMurtry, he was the best preacher, he was behind me in college, behind me a couple of years after me, but he was the best preacher in college until they started teaching him how to preach. And he got progressively worse, like we all did. And then you get to talk to real people like you, and you get progressively better. Some people do. And this week, in the last week, I've had a couple of really interesting death things around me. I did a funeral. Might talk about it at the end. A 73-year-old lady died in Paris, and her twin sister, her husband is a friend of mine, said, would I do a Thanksgiving service, which I did at the Wayside Chapel. This woman was, the testimonies went on forever. I could hardly get a word in about the Lord, to be honest with you. And we need to be a bit careful about, when we die. I mean, we don't need 2.5 hours to celebrate who we are. People haven't got it when we're alive. They're not going to get it after we go, it would appear to me. But the tributes were wonderful. And, of course, the fact that she wasn't there and she died a week earlier. And she was a dynamic, boisterous lady who at 60-something could still do somersaults. And these things came out of the woodwork. And then one day, with a wonderful husband, south of France, she got sick. Is somebody calling somebody? I've got to tell you this, parenthesis. Diane and I went to Messiah the other night. In the new opera house. Go and see. If you can't see that, see something else. Diane was sitting beside some English people who thought they were going to Carmen. Bit of a surprise. They got off the boat. Here's a ticket to the opera house. So at half time, he says to me, what's next? I said, oh, this is the best part. This is about Jesus' death and resurrection. And in the midst of that, the conductor was a very boisterous, wonderful young conductor. And he's just about to bring them into a new thing. Whatever it's called in music. And there were 3,000 at least people in the audience, and there was a little beep of the mobile phone. So you know how the conductors are very flamboyant, and they go, and before he went like that, the mobile phone went beep, and he just looked. And it stopped. And away you went. So And the message of the Messiah was about hope too. So in the last week, I did this service, and then I was visited a hospital and was in the elevator coming down, and it was at St. Vincent's. And a guy was trying to come in on the next floor, and being the gentleman I am, I put my hand against the door so he wouldn't get crushed to death, and he squeezed in. He said, "Oh, thanks, mate." And I said, because, you know, I think I'm funny sometimes, "That'll be $25, thanks." I won't use his language. He said, "Mate, you're cheaper than the car parking here." He said, "I came for half an hour's chemo, so I'm, and I'm very attuned to what people say, and I'm very aware of what that means for him a bit, not as aware as he is." And so we started talking, and he said, "What are you here for?" I said, "I'm just getting some tests." And he said, I told him what it was about. He said, "Oh, that'll be easy. They fix things like that really quickly around here." I said, "So what have they said to you?" And he said, he was 50, three kids. He said, "2 years." So when you think you're going through a difficult time, you're sharing that with a lot of other people. And then this coming week, I was invited to speak at a service in the city for the Honourable Bob Ellicott, QC and everything else. The most important thing in my life was his leadership at the Wayside Chapel of Healthy Harold and the life education vans, which have seen over millions of people in the last, 40 years. And he hasn't lived forever, so there's going to be a big crowd. But the most important thing he did was, like, when I worked for them, and he changed my life, asked me to come and help in that situation. He changed my life at a time when I was preaching and on radio and busy and stuff like that. But the thought of waking up every morning and saying, "Lord, thank you for helping me save the lives of three children every day from drugs, alcohol abuse and the like," was enough to get me out of bed for 15 years and make a difference. But he's the guy. There's always, nearly always, a person in our lives that has done that for us. And as you've heard me say, like me growing up without a father, I've had two or three or five men in my life, like Mansell, who put his hand on my shoulder on the beach one day and said, "Have you ever thought of serving Christ in the ministry?" So look around. Thank God for the things you've got and hang on to hope. What can I say? I meant to bring you the picture. Did I bring it? I think I did. This is the lady whose funeral I did this week. I kept it in the Bible because it reminded me, here is a woman in the top of her game. And if you're 70, you're at the top of your game. If you're 80, not so much. And I'm almost joining you on that. And she looked like she had a stroke in the home with her husband and just couldn't talk and, started not being able to use part of her body. And she didn't die of a stroke. She died 6 hours later. No symptoms, no medical history of the aorta valve separating from her heart inside for some reason or other, we don't know. But it's there around us all the time. And in my youth, I used to, for discipline, preach on Sundays based on the church calendar. You know, all the hotshots and the denomination get together at, I don't know, sort of Rome probably or Westminster, and they decide what the readings are going to be for the year. So we're in the season of Advent. Thank you. A few old Church of England Catholic people here. And so we're celebrating, but it celebrates not just the coming of Jesus into the world, but the coming of Jesus at the end of time when things are being wrapped up. But I don't do that anymore. It's very rare for me to find a Bible verse and say, I'm going to do this. That's why I tend not to do series anymore, which I used to do a lot of, because what happens to me this week is going to be different next week. Let me tell you three little stories. The man in the elevator was one. I was so concerned about that. I felt I'd failed him. We said goodbye, and I guess it's because one of my sons is about that age, and wished each other luck. And I wish I'd have said something like, may the Lord be with you, or something godly, religious, or whatever, but I didn't. And I don't worry about things, but I was concerned. When I make a mistake, I try to get it fixed if I can. Otherwise, like the prayer says, I let go and let God. I try to fix the things I can if I can and let the other things go. I did ring the medical foundation at the Westmead Hospital, asked to speak to the director and said, there's a guy I met in the elevator. I had no idea who I was talking about. I said, but do you have a process where people who have had that news or may have had that news for a while or are struggling can get together with somebody? I should have taken it. I should have, would have, could have. As one of my female preachers used to say in at Northside, she shocked the daylights out of the crowd one day. She got up and she read her sermons beautifully. And she said, let me give you some advice. I don't give advice, but let me give you this. Don't shoot on yourself. And most people thought she said, don't shit on yourself. Which, of course, no one would ever say in church, especially me. But it was kind of interesting. I was actually had me standing up in the back where Peter is. And, you know, people, you're all looking relaxed and, you know, in the spirit and stuff. And when she said, don't shoot on yourself, their heads went up. What did she say? But, you know, we're not here to give advice. We're here to share God's word in the context of today. I have another friend, a close friend, and Diane and I, and Diane's got to meet her. She was my secretary for a while. She'd been the secretary of David Jones in the city and retired and stuff. She came to the church. She was off the rails, got back on the rails, more or less, as much as any of us do. And she's just a terrific human being. She and I asked her, could I share this story? In 2006, she was given a diagnosis of stage 3 melanoma, poor prognosis. And she said, I remember she lives in Newcastle. We talked on the phone. She said, oh, give me maybe a couple of years. And I said, and she's about my age. And she said, oh, it'll be all right, Jay. God's in charge. And then they offered her some trial medication. This is very important for me. There was a case recently of people who were found guilty of withholding medical treatment from their children. Because somewhere or other they've got in the Bible, it's God alone. You may as well not eat. You know, save your shopping bills as well. God has placed so many great people. I'm not going to give you a lecture on this, but you know what I'm talking about. My guess is I'm going to get some water, but I can still talk, and you can still hear me on the microphone. Now, I don't want to go to the thing, but I like to talk with my hands, and having a microphone doesn't help. There are some of you here, I'm not one of these, but there are some of you here who would not be here without the gift of medical science that God has created healers and physicians and nurses and doctors and all right, morticians, I'll give you that. But that's a very important part. So Julie, some of her Christian friends, oh, that's putting poison on your body. Now, Julie's one that likes a couple of drinks, to be honest with you. Three glasses of wine and she's on the table. And I don't mean standing up. She's a real character. But she took a leap of faith because there are things, if God had something yet for her to do, she wanted to be there. And she tells me that was 16 years ago and she's cancer-free. I know of a young farmer who's 50. Grandparents went to my church, and he was diagnosed with a terrible pancreatic cancer, and they chopped bits of his liver out, and they had doctors from all over the country and around the world helping to keep him alive. He again, after being told, after he lost part of his liver, very painful, slow recovery, very scary, three kids, a big farm. And that was in, when was that, 2017. He's now working 10 to 12 hours a day on the tractor because it's harvest time wherever they are. And he could have given up. He looked at his kids, he looked at his family. He looked at whatever it is that God may have for him, he doesn't even know that yet. So what I'm talking about today is hanging on to hope. This passage is probably my favourite passage in the Bible. You know, Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. I've always wanted to live in a mansion. I saw something the other day, I was watching something on the Italian coastline, and there was a villa there. And Diane says to me, "When are you going to retire?" And I'm thinking, we could go to the villa, you know. In my Father's house are many, what's the plural of villas? Villae. Oh, villas. Diane's the language, the language mistress, but she's told me not to call her a mistress anymore, so I'm doing my best. So, and when I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And then Jesus had the apostles around him, and of course Thomas, who we call Thomas the doubter. You know, you're not a doubter if you're asking questions. I used to get into trouble in college because I used to ask a lot of questions. I mean, part of the reason was I didn't know anything. Seriously, I only became a Christian when I was 16. I went to church fairly regularly. But then all of a sudden, I'm 20, I'm in college with these guys that have had a life of growing up in the church. Where's Terry Blue? Strike me pink. Terry goes back 400 years in Church of Christ history, and they've only been going for 290 or something like that. And that's great. I love that this congregation, this church, our family can attract people who still have the fervor and faith in Christ that they had when their families, you know, their fathers and mothers and whoever were there. So here is Thomas asking the question, how do we know? And Jesus, as he would do, answered the question politely and said, basically, I am the truth. I am the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. And then Philip, who was an apostle, not to be confused with Philip the evangelist in Acts. But here's another guy who asked a question. And then when Jesus, another time, Jesus was going to, the 5,000 people turned up expecting lunch, gourmet lunch, the invitation had said, and nobody had anything. And Jesus said to Philip, how much have we got? He said, oh, we got some loaves and keep it with loaves and fishes, but it will cost a fortune. And Jesus said, I'll pick up the tab. Don't worry about that. So Jesus surrounded himself with people like us. When they had a question, they could ask us. When they had a doubt, it was okay to live with that and work through that. And I suppose what I get from Jesus all the time is the hope of the future. That's hope now. Yeah, I've heard people say about the culture and society we live in, there's no hope for our kids. What are our children growing up in? They're not sure whether to put a bra on or a jock strap in the morning when they get out of bed. They're not sure what sort of person they are. And we all go through that sort of stuff when you're a kid. I wanted to be a girl when I was about 14 or 15. And then I get sent out on the veranda again from the classroom. Another girl was sent out. She was older than me. She told me all about what teenage girls had to put up with. And I'm sticking with the boys. And I'm saying, nothing's easy at different stages of life. But you're quite right, if you've got concerns about your children or grandchildren, they're in a much more challenging situation than... somewhere the other day I was talking, I was in a Rotary meeting, and somebody mentioned the Good Samaritan. And I looked around the room and I thought, I wonder whether anybody would know who the Good Samaritan is. I mean, it's one of those biblical images we hang on to, and it means someone who will look after somebody else, but it's much more complicated than that, as we know. But it's important for us to be able to say there is hope, and there is as much hope with the message of Jesus Christ. And my prayer is there will be not an avalanche, but an influence of the life and goodness of Christ. When I get into fights with people about religion, I immediately go to Jesus. You know, the guy who rings up on the radio I've told you about, he doesn't believe in God. And I said, oh, tell me about that. And when he finishes, I said, I don't believe in that God either. But when you talk to people about this guy, Jesus Christ, and his life, his death, his resurrection, his presence, Jesus said, I won't leave you alone. I'll be with you in the presence of a comforter. So in the moments of despair and loneliness, you can depend that I'll be there. How do I know that? Just ask. There's a bloke we had here a few months ago called Ron Kennedy. Some of you old Dapto people know him. He was the bane of my life at the Dapto Church. His wife decided we could have a Bible study in her group. He was a Liverpool speaking, smoking, smelling, drinking, knockabout, a bit of a character guy. He wanted to kill me from time to time. And he came to Christ because one night he was sure Jesus came into his bedroom and said, Ron, you've got to start believing in me. Now, Jesus doesn't do that for everybody because most people aren't that thick or stubborn. I'm not talking ill of Ron. He went to theological college and worked for me at Northside for 2 years. But God is going to find us some way or other. And in this message, he's telling the disciples that he's going. They didn't get that. They were heartbroken. He was telling them that he was God. If you've seen me, you've seen God. You've seen the Father. That's very important because they didn't always get that. And if you think you're having a bad day as a Christian, look at the life of the apostles and what they went through. I'm just talking about them personally. They didn't get it either until very late in the piece, if at all. And he is going to be with us. If God, with Emmanuel, in the Christmas thing we talk about, he will be called Emmanuel, God with us, God in us. That's here now. I've got to not stay for lunch. I'm going to race up to a meeting in Sydney and driving the car for 2 hours. God will be with me driving the car. Okay, so if a Mack truck runs into me because he drives poorly or I make a bad decision, God is still going to be with me. My next waking moment will be seeing Jesus Christ. Don't get me tied up in all the stuff about whether there's a paradise or this or that or something else. That much I know. Jesus said, I'm going to be with you till the ends of the earth. And he tells us he's coming again. So this is the Advent season. You know, rejoice. You know, take the light of the world is in our lives, my friends. And if it isn't, invite Jesus to be part of your life and then tell somebody else and we'll be happy to support you. God bless you.